Hi, good morning, and welcome to Mediapharm's webinar question time, spotlight on OTC, how to work with PCTs to promote self-care. Okay, just some background to who we are. We are Mediapharm, the pharmacy education company, and this is the second in a series of question time webinars that we are holding to give all interested people, whether that be pharmacists, industry, other organisations, the opportunity to put questions to a panel of experts and contribute to a discussion exploring how to unlock the true potential of pharmacy. Today, the spotlight is on OTC and self-care, and we'll be asking the question, how can pharmacists, industry, NHS, all interested parties work to promote self-care? So with OTC being the focus, it may well be that we're looking at minor ailments, but just to say that self-care also relates to how people manage long-term conditions as well. And of course, as more medicines are switched from pom to P, OTCs don't just necessarily cover what we might traditionally have called minor ailments. So today is a unique opportunity for you to put your questions to our panel of experts. And just before I go into the sort of the logistics of the session, I'd just like to introduce our panel of experts to you. We are going to have three people joining us, all pharmacists with immense experience and various backgrounds. We have Mia Catan. Mia is an independent community pharmacy owner of 38 years, and in during his 38 years of practice, he's worked with Suffolk PCT Medicines Management Group. We'll also have joining us Mr. Ash Soney. Ash has over 20 years' experience as a practicing pharmacist and a leading practitioner. He represents pharmacy within NHS organisations as a chair of the PEC, Professional Executive Committee, at NHS Lambeth, and he's a practicing pharmacist. We're also joined today by Tony Carson. Tony currently has two roles. He's the Joint Community Pharmacy Commissioning Manager at NHS Tower Hamlets and is also seconded to East and South East England Specialist Pharmacy Services, through which he supports PCTs across London with community pharmacy issues. He joins us today in that latter capacity as his role with the South East and South East England Specialist Pharmacy Services, and therefore any views that he does give are his own. He's not representing those of any particular PCT. Also, as Tony is a public servant, and with all public servants, he's restricted on what he can say on any matter relating to government policy during the period of a general election. Tony has a varied background. He's worked in community pharmacy, he's worked in hospital pharmacy, and has had a stint as an LPC secretary. He's worked for a number of PCTs, and before them, health authorities, in community pharmacy development roles for over 14 years. And just to introduce myself, my name is Marie Chatterton. I'm Head of Projects and Research here at Mediapharm. And my role here today is to chair the debate. My background is also in community pharmacy. I have 10 years of experience in community pharmacy. And also I'm from an academic background where I've worked as a clinical practice lecturer at Medway School of Pharmacy. And I've also had a role in postgraduate education at Keele University. And in both of those roles, I've been involved in researching the implementation of pharmacist prescribing in the West Midlands, and also as part of student products, looking at POM to P, pharmacist attitudes to POM to P switches. Okay, so how this is going to progress now is we're just going to have a few slides to set the scene of the question time, but this is intended as an opportunity for you to ask questions. It's intended as a live discussion, an opportunity to hear our panel's views on questions and issues that you put to them. So you'll see from the control panel that you're able to type in your questions and send them to us. So you can do this any time during debate. I will then take the questions and put them to our panel. But obviously, just to say, this is a 45-minute session, so it is possible that we may not be able to address all the questions that are sent in. However, we will, of course, make a record of them and answer them if we can on our LinkedIn Mediapharm Pharmacy Insight group. Okay, so as you'll see there, self-care, today's spotlight's on OTC, and of course OTC medicines play a big part in the management of minor ailments. Recent sort of reports have cast a light on minor ailments and the burden of treating these on the NHS, and certainly all policies are looking to increase the use of pharmacy in this area. So self-care, we traditionally would probably think of these as treating mild to moderate minor ailments. But self-care, as we've already said, doesn't just refer to minor ailments as such. It's more about taking responsibility for maintaining health, preventing ill health, and dealing with minor ailments and also long-term conditions. So what's the pharmacist's role in all this? Well, pharmacists are highly trained healthcare professionals. They are experienced and trusted, easily accessible and readily available to the public. And also of the documents such as the pharmacy white paper would advocate and encourage a widening role of the pharmacist. And within the community pharmacy contractual framework, pharmacists are within the essential services need to support self-care, so helping patients to appropriately treat minor ailments and also to support them in long-term conditions. Pharmacists are also now involved in enhanced services, where and these are services that are commissioned locally by primary care trusts. One that seems to lend itself well to self-care is the minor ailment services that are provided by pharmacies, so whereby patients are able to go to the pharmacy to access medicines. Also, enhanced services aren't just restricted to minor ailment services. Cover a wide range of issues, including things such as the supply of emergency hormonal contraception, cardiovascular risk assessments, a range of things. So it covers long-term conditions as well. And even in the OTC world, the medicines that are available to pharmacists aren't necessarily just for what we might have termed the sort of minor ailments. We've seen medicines such as Ally, Clomel, Levonel. These are all medicines that are more to do with public health, so weight management, sexual health, men's health. So in a nutshell, and just to sort of kick this debate off, we'd say that, you know, it's all about empowering people to self-care and the appropriate use of NHS resources. And pharmacists are willing and able to support self-care. But what more can be done? What would pharmacists like to do? What would the public like to see pharmacists doing? How can they be supported to further develop their role? And maybe these are things that we can talk about now within our question time. Now, we have had some questions before the session, and I will start off with those. But as I say, this is an interactive session, and I would encourage you all to send your questions throughout the remaining time of the question time now. So the first question that I have, and if I could possibly put this to Mia first, Mia, who I introduced earlier, what are the factors that a PCT might consider when they're choosing a medicine to include on a minor ailment scheme formulary? That's one of the questions that we've had from one of our attendees, Mia, if you could give us some light on that.
I'm trying to think what I meant by that. Well, I think what we're really talking about is to get any sort of funding, one would have to work with the PCT. And obviously in different areas we find that different needs are necessary. Mm-hmm. So by working closely with the PCT, then obviously we can address these issues. So if we have a national background to the product, it may be that it's not relevant to that area. And okay. I think that this has to be addressed.
Okay. So sort of add in there, saying the question's not as easy as that then. It's because all areas have individual needs. It's
exactly.
Not sort of that easy to say what now the sort of generalised factors that might contribute to a medicine being chosen for a formulary. Would I be correct
yes.
there? Okay.
Yes, I think so. Sorry, I was just going to say that obviously with the national areas that we sort of going into, it's sometimes very difficult to sort of centralise and to localise that product because obviously we have different populations.
Yes. Yeah. Tony, do you have anything that you would like to add to that? Anything, any light that you can shed on that? Or has Mia covered off...
Well, no, I think Mayor has touched on one of the most important bits, which is what are the local needs? What is the reason actually that's driving the minor ailment scheme to begin with?
Mm-hmm.
But getting over that and thinking you've got over that this is a drug which meets the needs, then I think it's probably things that are, first of all, what's the evidence? And by that I mean we wouldn't, a PCT probably wouldn't want to be including drugs which they wouldn't expect a GP to be prescribing.
Okay.
So some of the drugs of limited therapeutic value, they wouldn't expect to see that in the minor ailments formula in the same way as you wouldn't expect to see GPs prescribing them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think there is a bit about some of the evidence about the safety and also the ease of use. I know we'll come on to it later, but something like a recent POM to peace, which may not be something that would automatically jump at you as being something you would include necessarily in the minor ailment formulary, simply because usually there's a lot of additional training and additional things that go hand in hand with that product. And therefore that might make it less likely to be included in the formulary. And then I think also is an element of cost as well.
Okay. Thanks for that, Mia and Tony. I think that what wraps it up there is a couple of elements. Firstly, local needs, and it's not just any sweeping answer to something that needs to be included, but then the things that come down to, the sort of individual choices, and the key there being evidence base, safety and ease of use, and also training. Thank you for your answers to that one. Ash is a little bit delayed. Just to say I introduced another panel member, but he is a working pharmacist and he's bringing that perspective. So he's been a little bit delayed. So we just have Tony and Mia with us at the moment. Also, can I just remind you that this is an interactive session. So if you can enter your questions, you'll see on the panel that you have, the control panel, that there's a section for you to put in questions, and you can send them over to us. And also, all questions that are put in will be anonymous. We won't be attributing any names to those. So please do feel free to send in your questions. Okay. The next question then that I'd like to put to both Mia and Tony is what does a pharmacist consider when choosing an OTC product to recommend and sell to a patient? So I think what the question asker is intended here is, what are the important things to a pharmacist if somebody's asking about symptoms? And Tony, I guess I'm guessing that evidence-based safety needs of use, the things that you discussed there for minor ailment schemes, are the same for a pharmacist choosing a medicine over the counter?
I think so. I think that's exactly the same route that a patient that the pharmacist will go through. Mm. I think it's also a bit about, because often you'll have a range of products then which may well meet all of those, so is it about patient desire about their choice? Cost may well come in as well.
Patient preference. And it would seem to me to be, and certainly from my experience in community pharmacy, that is a key thing. If somebody's had experience with something in the past or, has a preference, let's say, for example, for an oral preparation or a topical preparation, if those were the choices, then, that's going to play a big part in the pharmacist's decision-making. Mia, how would you agree?
I certainly would agree with that. But on top of that, you have to put into the fact that advertising plays a very great part in patients choosing a product.
Right.
The power of television, of the press, is absolutely immense. And when you get a patient coming in asking for something specifically that they've seen on television, it may sometimes be quite difficult to actually tell them it isn't suitable for them.
Right.
But otherwise, that certainly has to be taken into account when products are being chosen by the patient.
Okay, so the other influences on a patient.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, and another thing I would add there is it's not always just advertising, but it's not always just the experience of the patient, but also the experience of people that they know, isn't it?
Exactly.
Their mother, father, whoever who's used a medicine, if they've seen that it was good, or that person's told them it was, good in inverted commas, then that will have an influence on them
very
as well.
Very much so.
Okay, thanks very much for that. Move on to Pompey Pea here, a question we'd had in about that, and it was about what conditions should be addressed when considering future Pompey Pea switches. What the person has asked specifically here is, what do pharmacists think would be most useful to their practice? So as a pharmacist, Mia, perhaps first you'd like to talk about the kind of things that you think.
When these are announced, I always say to myself, oh, I never thought of that. And when it comes on, I think, yeah, that's a pretty good one. So in reality, obviously, unless you have a huge demand for something, mm-hmm. That people are asking for specifically, it's very, very difficult to pinpoint. Mm-hmm. And in the past we've had some very successful Pompey Peas, and we've also had some fairly less successful, let's put it that way. Yeah. And ultimately it is down to the manufacturers to put the money behind that and to put that through. Mm-hmm. I do feel, however, that they could perhaps liaise a little bit more with pharmacists to get some idea of what they feel is necessary or might be required.
Okay, and just to follow up on that, because I know that somebody else has asked about sort of pharmacist engagement with Pompey Pea, and what is it that you feel that pharmacists need, Mia? Engagement even before the switch has happened?
Oh, so definitely. Right. Some sort of consultation, but suddenly we suddenly seem to have this product, it's announced it's going Pompey Pea, or you hear it through the grapevine,
right?
And you think, well, okay, that may be good, that may be bad, but obviously a lot of it depends on the training that we're going to get from the manufacturers and our associations, and whether or not that product is suitable for that population in that area.
Thanks very much for that. Okay, another question that has come through from one of our attendees, and I think perhaps, Tony, this might be something that you can answer. It's quite a general question about the various functions within a PCT and which ones of those relate to pharmacy. The person's commented that sometimes the job titles seem to vary widely, and just wondering if there's any uniformity there.
Yes, I laugh because I think the longer you stay in the NHS, the longer your job title becomes. But I think one of the problems, and I can certainly see this from people outside of PCTs, is that there is no set structure for PCTs. There are functions the PCT has to do, but how they structure themselves is really down to each organisation. And pharmacy will often be in one or two areas at least, and often, with my colleagues in PCTs, I often have this discussion about where are you best set to sit within the PCT, and often there's no right or wrong answer. So, I've worked in a PCT where pharmacy has been part of public health. I've worked in PCT where pharmacy has been part of primary care commissioning.
Yeah.
I've worked in a PCT where pharmacy sits with medicines management, and that sits in its own little team. Also bear in mind that even if there's someone that's identified as being the lead for the community pharmacy, there may well be other services. So, for example, stop smoking services are often actually commissioned through public health or through the stop smoking coordinators, so not through the pharmacy team. Drug services, substance use services are usually commissioned through the DAT, which is the joint team between the primary care trust and the local authority. So I think the simple answer is there is no simple structure in any one PCT. The important thing is to try to identify within the PCT who a lead contact is and to make contact and discussions with them.
Okay. And how might somebody go about identifying who that lead contact is? Is there an intuitive way of doing that? Or speak to if either a pharmacist or a company wanted to speak to a decision maker within a PCT?
possibly the easiest way is to contact, if it's not clear, is to contact the chief pharmacist or the head of medicines management. They will, if pharmacy, community pharmacy isn't within their remit, then they will certainly know where it does sit within the PCT. And that's probably, if it's not clear, that's probably the easiest way to identify. I mean, PCTs are forever going through restructuring and reform, and you know, just from a job title, it could be very difficult just to identify that.
Right. So if as a starting point, you were looking at somebody who had got perhaps chief pharmacist, head of medicines management in their title, then they presumably would then be able to put the person onto whoever is responsible for a certain thing within that PCT.
Yeah.
Okay. Mia, do you have anything to add to that from your experience?
Quite a lot. it was in my experience with PCT, sort of working with them and alongside them. I find that the most convenient way to sort of contact people would be to have it's like an A4 sheet with everyone's name on it, with contact numbers, email addresses. But I realise the difficulties because personnel change very, very frequently. So it is difficult to sort of keep that up to date.
Mm-hmm.
But that certainly would be a great help. The other thing is that there's always changes of names. I mean, they're no longer PCTs, they're NHS and the area.
Mm-hmm.
It's not this and that PCT.
Okay.
And, you know, that has changed. But certainly I think we need to have very good contact with the PCT. And I think some PCTs actually do this better than others.
Okay. Thanks for that, Mia. And I believe we've now been joined by Ash Soney, who I introduced earlier on. As I said, he is in practice, so he's just been able to join us. Ash, we were just discussing PCTs and the various functions within PCTs that relate to pharmacy and how, the way in which they're structured, and whether either a pharmacist or a company wanted to speak to somebody, a decision maker within a PCT. That you've probably heard Mia was saying there. Do you have anything that you can add to the discussion at all?
To be honest, I heard everything that Tony said as well.
Oh, okay, super.
Sorry for the delay. I got the phone working, but I couldn't get the IT working.
No problem. That's no problem at all.
And just I think that's as Tony expressed, though, the thing is that it does vary considerably about where you go within the organisation. Mm-hmm. And I do think what you have to do is you need to identify, probably through medicines management, what the best route is, if you want to try and identify who is the lead. And actually, you know, it's not then just a question of going in and saying, hello, I am, would you do this? You have to start to recognise that, you know, people have the jobs they do within the organisations. Mm-hmm. You have to culture and build those relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like, for example, a pharmacist, another similar question we've had is about a pharmacist interest, you know, if they're interested in commission and sort of start an enhanced service that they think that would be useful to provide from their pharmacy, sort of how do they get started, who do they talk to? And I think what you're talking about there is, you know, it's not just going, hello, you know, I'd like to do this, but engagement with anyone at the PCT.
Well, yeah, and read the documents, because PCTs produce a whole raft of documents, strategic plans, operating plan, which actually should give you a steer as to things that the PCT are looking to do.
Mm-hmm.
And talk to the clinical leads, talk to the back chair, talk to PBC.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think this can also be sort of, you could also add the fact that if you have a forum of pharmacists in that area, you often can sort of contact other pharmacists that have had contact with the PCT to find out who the best person to contact. So a little bit more networking, I think this is very, very useful.
Okay, so networking, you know, I suppose the message is you can't do it on your own. Would that be fair?
That's
more difficult. It's definitely more difficult.
Yeah, okay. Hi. Okay. We were discussing earlier, Ash, sort of positive piece switches and the things that pharmacists might find useful to the practice, and also the things that pharmacists want or need from a positive piece switch. And we've had a sort of response from that from one of our attendees who's talking about sort of, you know, and I think Mia, you alluded to it, that the, you know, different positive piece switches have had various degrees of commercial success. So I mean, the question from the attendee is, and perhaps Mia or Ash, you might want to comment on this, is what do you think about the commercial value of you know, pump to piece switches? It's quite a...
I suppose from a company point of view, it's about being able to advertise the product, and that's a big bonus. From a very cynical point of view, actually, from a pharmacist's point of view, it starts to demonstrate the fact that the expert in medicines is the pharmacist, and actually that the manufacturers, the industry, recognise that and are trying to promote the role of pharmacists as healthcare providers, which sometimes I think, my view is that on occasion the industry is not very good at that. It tends to forget the role of pharmacists and concentrate very much on the role of GPs.
Right. Okay, so a recognition of the pharmacist as their wider role, and I think we were discussing that earlier, is sort of thinking about, you know, the wider public health role of the pharmacist and how a pharmacist would support a patient in signposting them, for example, and those kind of things. And Mia,
yeah,
do you have anything to add? Thank you. Mia, do you have anything to add to that at all?
Yeah, I think coming back to what Tony said, that although everything has a commercial value, it's a pharmacist's responsibility, and this is where the professionalism comes in, is that it's signposting people who might need more contact with their doctor instead of just buying stuff over the counter just because it is available. Also, I would say that you do then, by having it over the counter, there is maybe a problem with people who perhaps cannot afford it. So it's really, as it's an OTC and it's available over the counter, people are having to pay for it. It does limit sometimes the access to some of the population.
Okay. Tony, do you have anything to add to this, or has that covered everything there, do you think?
No, I just to add, I think it's just broadened just a little bit, but thinking about, and again, I'm coming at it from the NHS perspective, but more and more within the NHS, we are defining clinical care pathways in terms of treating patients. And I think it would be useful for companies, etc., when they're considering POM to P-switch, is think of it as a clinical care pathway, and where would the P product fit into that care pathway. So it's again not thinking about it in isolation, but thinking about it in the whole. And I think that's something which in the NHS we have to think of much better, is how do we treat a whole condition, and understanding the role that pharmacy can play in that they can intervene in a number of places. We probably need support in thinking about where pharmacy can intervene, particularly when it's not around prescription medicines or advice along with prescription medicines, but thinking about the public health, the prevention. Where does the sale of an over-the-counter product fit into that?
Sorry, I was just going to say, you mentioned clinical care pathways there.
And,
you know, are those sort of things, and Ash, you'd also talked about various documents that are within a PCT. I mean, are these things easy to see? Are they a public, you know, a public record, so to speak?
You go to the PCT website, and they're all available on there. And actually, if you speak to the PCT, you contact the Medicines Management, they will tell you where these papers are. You can get them off them. You can get them from the PCT. They are launched as public documents. That you go attend a board meeting. They will present it at a board meeting.
And most of them as well, there should be pharmacy input into the design of them, so that, you know, Ash mentioned clinical leaders, etc. You know, those are also people to talk to about, to get an understanding of what they are. I have to say, some of them are in various stages. Some are much more well defined, like diabetes, than others. But, you know, I think that's an important thing to bear in mind, particularly for future switches.
Okay, well, thanks for that. A question we've had earlier in the week, and it relates to, I think this was possibly from a pharmacist, Ash, and perhaps you'd like to answer this one, is the question simply is, what is a PEC and why is it important to pharmacy?
Okay, thanks. What's a PEC? The PEC is the clinical engine room of the organisation. The PEC chair sits on a parallel position to the chief executive of the organisation. He's the clinical lead. So you have a board of which the chair is the senior, most senior person. And below that, she has a management team and a clinical team, effectively. And that then provides the input into how things happen. In terms of the PEC, it then acts as a, as I say, as a, it's a clinical leadership organisation and part of the governance structure. So it creates the environment which allows decisions which are made to about how practice should be developed need almost a clinical check to make sure that they're done in a way that is achievable. Because it's all very well having a great idea, but actually if you can't do it, there's not much point. And there's not much point trying to tell the public this is what you're going to do if you can't do it. So the PEC acts as that sort of clinical sounding board. But, for example, if you get to know your PEC chair, one of the things I've done here is that over the course of 4 months, I've had the dentist come and present. I had the optometrist come and present. I had the pharmaceutical needs assessment presented last month, and I've got the pharmacist coming to present this month to give an opportunity to say what they can do. And how they can help the PCT to achieve its strategic plan and its operating plan, its objectives for the next 5 years. And actually, beyond that, the PEC then, from my perspective, and it does vary from PEC to PEC, but my PEC is now working very closely with practice-based commissioners to look at how they are going to commission services and what they commission from whom. So it isn't always just about commissioning from general practice. And nursing. It's about how do you utilise all the skills you have in primary care in an environment where things are shifting. And it goes, and interestingly, I think, you know, the issue that Tony raised about recognising where POM2P sits in that is quite important. Because it is an important element of it. Does that steer?
It certainly gives a brief overview of what the PEC is. And just had a comment through from an attendee who missed that bit. The PEC stands for Professional Executive Committee, is that correct?
That's right.
Just to say, in some PCTs that's now changed to PEC, so the Clinical Executive Committee, but it's really the same thing.
Oh, right, okay. So PEC, there's PECs and there's KECs.
And there's
KECs.
Okay. But ultimately, whoever they are, what you need to do is one of the things that pharmacy should do is that it should identify who the PEC chair is and make contact, because they are the clinical lead for the organisation. And actually, if you've got things that you want them to do or to help with, they are your best route into the organisation.
Right, okay. Okay, and you mentioned there POM2P, and that's important in terms of the sort of fitting into there. Is there anything else you can add to the?
Well, no, I think just from the point that Tony was making about, you know, fitting into care pathways, because one of the things is that there's a shift that's happening from acute care to primary care, which is one of the things that is going to happen over the medium term. But actually, part of that may be, and a significant element of this, is about self-care.
Right.
And one of the things that all primary care organisations are working on is how to get patients to take greater responsibility for their own care and be involved in self-care. And actually, you know, as a result, there is an appropriate place where P-medicines fit within that procedure.
And what kind of support do you find? Is it what we discussed earlier in terms of that, you know, that when a POM2P switch is being made, that pharmacists from the manufacturers perhaps need more support in the sort of the wider public health role? Does that sort of link into that?
Yeah, absolutely. Because again, it's part of it is that, you know, one of the things is that when you go to a primary care organisation, they'll turn around and say, well, what skills do you have? Can you demonstrate your ability to provide X service? Well, actually, if industry helps in terms of providing some of the educational support, training, resources, that sort of thing, it becomes much easier to be able to go to an organisation and say, we can do this because we have these skills.
Okay, Mia, do you have anything to add to that?
Obviously, I can't speak with the same knowledge that Ash has with his contact with that, but certainly I'd agree with everything he's said. And certainly there's been a lot of help. I mean, just to give one example is flu vaccination. Now, a lot of the companies are giving the opportunity to pharmacists to provide this this service as a retail service, perhaps, not under the same PGD that, say, a PCT might want. But it is making the PCT aware that there are pharmacists able to do this, and this could open it up much further for other services that may come along.
Okay. Well, I think we've thanks for all your input there. I think we've covered off the PEC and why it's important to pharmacy, and sort of diverted again into POM to PEC switches there. And I know that questions are jumping about a little bit, but obviously it's what we get the questions that we're getting in. And I've had a question in that it's asking for the views of the panel on how industry can support pharmacists in relation to OTC medicines. I mean, I just from listening to what you've said there, it's no different from the POM to PEC switches, presumably, is it?
That's right.
In terms of skills and wider public health roles. Would I be correct there?
Yes, and certainly also providing the training, which most manufacturers do when they introduce a POM to PEC. But, you know, that's the type of thing that we really do need. So even though we may know it, it's sometimes useful to have that fallback that we've done the training, we know the rough PGD, if you like, and that we are following it.
Okay. Ash, do you have anything to add there, or do you think...
No, I think it's covered. I think to a great extent, that's it. It's about providing, it's putting yourself in a position where, let's say, industry helps you to understand how to deliver something in terms of the educational element, so that when you go to organisations, you have a much stronger position to be able to say, we can help because we can demonstrate our capability through this training pack.
Yeah. Tony, do you have anything to add there?
I think there was not much to cover in that. I suppose I would be a little bit devil's advocate here, because the question was about how industry can support pharmacists over the counter medicines, I suppose, wearing my public health hat. And coming back to evidence base, is that I do think there is an issue about ensuring that those over the counter medicines that have been sold are being sold on the basis of evidence. And that there's probably a question mark over a number of over-the-counter medicines about, things which, say, for example, things that we wouldn't prescribe in the NHS, etc. And I would prefer to see industry supporting pharmacists selling over-the-counter medicines where there is much clear evidence about their effectiveness and long-term and benefits.
Yeah, and I guess a question that comes into my mind there is that, pharmacists, are they, all geared up for that sort of evidence base? I mean, to me, that's been involved in undergraduate and postgraduate training. Evidence is included within the curriculum, and pharmacists are, sort of switched on to think about evidence. But do they need that evidence presenting to them? Would that be correct there, perhaps, Tony? What would you do?
I think have the evidence presented to them. I think pharmacists also are very good at recognising when that evidence doesn't stack up. They are trained, and we are trained to be analytical and questioning. But it's just coming. So I think pharmacists are well grounded in that. So I suppose I'm coming from the angle of not putting loads of support into getting pharmacists to sell products which may not really have that benefit.
Right, okay. Thanks for that. So I'm just mindful that we're getting towards the end of the session here. It's 11:43 and it's just a 45-minute session. So probably only got time for about perhaps one more question. And a question I've had through is in relation to PCT sort of health promotion campaigns, sort of how they work and how do pharmacists get involved in those. Perhaps, I don't know if perhaps Ash or Tony would like to take that question first.
Well, I suppose I'm happy to kickstart in terms of how they work. Again, it's down to each individual PCT. One hopes that each PCT should have some form of strategy around their public health campaigns and mm-hmm. identifying which ones they're going to ask community pharmacists to participate in. Mm-hmm. But how that then actually happens is really down to the PCT, usually with feed input mm-hmm. from the LPC, the Local Pharmaceutical right. Committee, about okay. what the structure of that campaign would be. And, you know, by definition, those are campaigns which all community pharmacists are required because it's an essential service to participate mm-hmm. in. So mm-hmm. it shouldn't be a matter of how do pharmacists get involved in them. They should be aware of them already. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, I would hope PCTs are providing some form of briefing and support, whether that's meetings, whether that's additional paperwork or links, etc., on websites, etc., to, mm-hmm. to support people in providing those campaigns.
Okay, thanks. Is there anything, Ash, you'd like to add there?
No, I think the only thing I would suggest is that make sure that when the PCT are doing it and you're working with the PCT, particularly if it's the LPC are sort of making suggestions, that they're looking at what are the public health needs of the population that they're serving.
Yeah.
Because there is a danger of trying to promote public health or trying to do health promotion messages because it happens to be something that particular people want to, but actually doesn't necessarily fit with the strategic direction of the mm-hmm. organisation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Mia, just perhaps if I could put this question to you as a sort of to finish that question off and to perhaps mm-hmm. finish the session off. We've talked about public health campaigns there and how pharmacists get involved. Do you think, I suppose it's what we've been talking about all the way through this, isn't it? You know, industry, do they have a role in supporting pharmacists to do this, and it links into Pompe switches, OTC medicines, etc., in terms of giving pharmacists the skills, the training, in order to be able to take on this public health role?
Well, I think, yes, they do. I mean, as Tony said, we all have in our contract, we have to do so many mm-hmm. promotions every year. Now, mm-hmm. this is where possibly the manufacturers and could come into a little bit of help, because although every promotion that comes along, everything looks the same, sometimes a little bit of ingenuity can often spur people to look at your windows a little bit more, just on that first opportunity. So something with a window display, you know, may possibly help. Mm-hmm. A little bit of extra here and there. Mm-hmm. So they can get involved with the PCT to help that promotion.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously, we can just do the standard things the PCT want us to do. It's down mm-hmm. to us to involve the clients as they come in.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes we do need a little bit of va-va-voom, if you like, to make people aware of the promotion and think, you know, that will set them into thinking along their self-care route. And, mm-hmm. you know, they may then come in and then we can sort of go through the process then. But to mm-hmm. leave it to just in-store and leaving it to us to meet everyone's needs can be a little bit time-consuming and not always possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thanks very much for your answers there. And we've come to the end of the session now. It's just planned as a 45-minute session. I'd like to thank again our panel of experts, so Mia, Tony and Ash, who I think have provided a very thought-provoking and stimulating debate there. So thank you very much for taking part. There's a facility to be able to, you can join us at our pharmacyinsight.co.uk, our blog, if you want to continue the discussion, or also at our LinkedIn Media Farm Pharmacy Insight. You know, we have been getting a number of questions in, and unfortunately we've not had time to answer them all. So we will perhaps be looking to post some of these questions with their answers onto our LinkedIn site. So thank you very much for attending, and our next webinar, a date to be confirmed as yet, we'll be looking at Pompe.